Hi, it's Paul O'Neill from Trans-Siberian. This is Suzanne.
Hi, yes. Hi, Paul. It's Suzanne. How are you?
Hey, Suzanne. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, tired, but it's all going great.
I'm here on the phone with Paul O'Neill, who is the producer, writer, guitarist for the Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
And glorified this, babysitter.
This is a busy time of the year for you, huh? Or do you guys tour all throughout the year?
Basically, either record or tour all throughout the year. You know, finally, we turned in the Nightcastle album about 7 weeks ago because
that's right.
It was supposed to come out July 2005. We obviously have missed that date, and then once Guns N' Roses had to go mess with us by turning in Chinese Democracy, we no longer had that to hide behind.
Oh my goodness, really?
And, 7 weeks ago, we turned in, Nightcastle.
Right.
Two CDs.
A double CD.
First half is Nightcastle, a new rock opera. Second half is a regular album where we pay homage to people that influenced us, like Greg Lake from Emerson, Lake & Palmer joined us, and we did a cover of Emerson, Lake & Palmer's Nutcracker, which was their way of paying tribute to Tchaikovsky. Getting this album finally turned in. Again, two CDs, 68-page booklet, illustrated by Greg Hildebrand to Lord of the Rings fame. And then Warner Brothers really came to the party, came out last Tuesday, $10.99 around the world for both CDs and a 68-page book. And then Amazon.com went an extra mile and did the digital download. Both albums and a 68-page PDF, $7.99, and I do believe it hits Billboard this week, number 5 in the album charts, number 1 in the digital download charts.
Congratulations. That is just astounding. And, of course, we're looking forward to your appearance in Providence at the Dunkin' Donuts Center on Wednesday, November 18th. Two shows, a 4 o'clock and an 8 o'clock show. You're doing a matinee this year there.
Yep.
And I have got to admit, I have never, ever seen the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, but that's going to change this year. I'm going to be at the 8 o'clock performance on Wednesday the 18th. I cannot wait. I mean, every year comes and goes, and I hear all my friends saying, oh, I'm going, and now this time I'm finally going. And for those listeners that are with us today that don't quite, I think everybody knows the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, but you've been called like a mix of the Who's Tommy and Andrew Lloyd Webber with Pink Floyd Lights.
Pretty much. Now, at this point, whoever saw it last year is twice as big this year. Crew is over 300 people.
Wow.
It is like a mini city. You know, depending on the size of the building, we're spending close to $1 million a week on pyro.
Mm.
Stages to both ends of the arena. The trussing system moves in time to the music. The trussing from the main stage basically crosses the midpoint of the arena, nearly hits the backstage. And it's and the main thing is, of course, the second half of the show, we get to throw in a lot of new songs from Nightcastle, and it's just, the band's, we don't want people to leave the arena saying, that was a great show. We don't want them to leave saying, man, it was the best show I ever saw. We want them to leave saying, man, we just ripped that band off blind.
Yeah.
Which is why we keep tickets between $25 and $60.
That's reasonable, very reasonable.
No Golden Circle. And this way, anybody can afford it, and it's which is important to us just because what's the point of making an album or, doing a rock concert if, only the only corporations or the ultra-wealthy can afford it?
Mm-hmm.
And
That's true. Now, the incredible staging, the pyrotechnics, there's really no second-class seat in the house wherever you perform because you put so much into the kind of that cinematic experience. And you've also worked with, I think you mentioned it, you partnered with Greg Hildebrand, the artist famed for his work on, Star Wars?
Star Wars, yeah. He did the probably the most iconic painting from last century because you show that Star Wars painting with Luke Skywalker and the lightsaber and anybody 7 to 107 on any continent, they look at it and go, Star Wars.
Sure, sure.
Like you show anybody the Mona Lisa, they go, Mona Lisa.
Right, right.
And he also has the biggest selling calendars of all time with the Lord of the Rings because he did all the Lord of the Rings strings and the Hobbit illustrations. And the way he just, brings the stories to life is, just beyond belief. And it's and a lot of new members this year, Alexa Goddard, young teenage girl from Great Britain, Jeff Scott Soto, who took Steve Perry's place in Journey, just joined. And every year we had new members, new players, a new keyboard player from Russia, because we added this new song called Moonlight and Madness that's just so hard to play. We basically only could find 4 keyboard players who could do it, and we have all 4. And,
wow.
I can't wait. Because, not only do they have to be able to play it, they have to be able to play it to make it look easy.
The TSO donates $1 from every ticket sold to charity. right? And over the past years, you've donated $5 million to charity.
It's added up, but again, it's a large part of that. The reason we've been able to do that is honestly because of the radio stations, because you know, back in the 90s and the 80s, we used to just, at the end of the year, we'd always write one check to a big charity, and then one year we found out that, we will let them rename nameless, but we found out that 97 cents out of every dollar went to overhead.
Like,
how is that possible? Yeah. And they go, they had a convention in a golf resort of the Caribbean. I'm like, about how to end poverty. I'm like, how about not going to the golf resort and giving the money to the poor? But anyway, then somebody said, you know what we should do? Instead of giving one big check, you know, take $1 to $2 from every show, get the radio stations involved, because the stations tend to know, you know, the charities that actually get it to the people. They always tend to be the same suspects, either soup kitchens or the Salvation Army. Double thing of anybody who's even thinking about fooling around won't if there's a radio station involved, because then you will get on the news. Mm-hmm. And it's just, the last time we did an audit, 98 cents out of every dollar went to the people that needed it, and 2 cents went to overhead, and that we can live with.
That's I'm glad you looked into that, because it's very important. You know, and I'm realizing reading your bio that your producing has credits include Aerosmith's Platinum Classics Live, Volumes 1 and 2. I had no idea that you worked on that, and tons of others, albums.
It was actually funny last year, because number one, we really feel fortunate, because I kind of feel like TSO was the last band to have old-fashioned artist development.
Right, and that's so important these days. In this, you know, as I know, you originally was signed with Atlantic, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, under Ahmed Erdogan.
And,
you know, so many people think bands like Yes, The Who, you know, Led Zeppelin, you know, Aerosmith were hits out of the box. They weren't. When I first ran this idea past them, I said, full rock band with a full metal band, with a symphony, with 24 lead singers, from every age group, from 18, you know, the rock world, the R&B world, the classical world. You know, somebody said, why? And I said, this way, there would be no artificial limits. We could do anything. Basically, Ahmed wrote a blank check. And the first year, he didn't even sell 100,000 copies, but Ahmed stuck with us. And by the time we started touring in 99, it was, you know, straight to the theaters and coliseums. We were really lucky to never play the clubs, never have an opening act, never be an opening act. But we decided to bring back a tradition that kind of died away in the 70s, which, because I remember growing up in New York City, you go to the Garden, you see George Harrison, Bob Dylan would come out unannounced. You go see Billy Preston, and Keith Richards would come out unannounced for the encore. So the first time we played the Garden, you know, Joan Jett came out and did I Love Rock and Roll. And then after that, we had people like, you know, John Anderson, you know, from Yes came out and did Roundabout. You know, Roger Daltrey came out and did Behind Blue Eyes, Pinball Wizard. Greg Lake did Welcome Back, My Friends, The Show Never Ends. You know, Paul Rogers did, you know, All Right Now and Bad Company songs. But the interesting thing was, when we had John Anderson, we did two shows in one day in Sacramento, and he said, Paul, I hear you split the band in half in the winter. Can I play with the other half? And I'm like, sure. So we go to Philly, and John told me a story which I found fascinating. I mean, for those of your listeners that don't remember Ahmed, I mean, he only died 2 years ago, but the last of the great, you know, A&R guys, I mean,
old school, real old school,
Genesis. Yes, I mean, Ray Charles, I mean, but John told me that when they first put out the first Yes album, which Starship Troop, you know, I think in 68, he got a call in 69 from Ahmed saying, John, I got bad news for you. America just says no. And John goes, what do I do? And Ahmed goes, what do you think you do? You go back in the studio, go make another record. Suzanne, I don't think that would happen these days.
No, and they'd probably get dropped from the label. Like, yeah, definitely like a hot potato.
Yeah, it just happens, you know, that often. And you know, again, Ahmed was like the Tom Hammonds, you know, I think he was the guy who, they had an artist whose first two albums stiffed really hard, and Columbia wanted to drop them. And Tom Hammond was like, don't drop this guy, you'll regret it. The guy's next album was Born to Run.
And the rest is history there,
the rest
right?
Is history.
Wow. But, those are great stories to share. Great stories, Paul.
You know, and, oh, and, you know, speaking of development, you know, so last year we got a call from, and he goes, Paul, Greg Lake, British, John Anderson, British, Roger Daltrey, British, Ian Hunter, British. And he goes through the whole list. He goes, what's the Brits? Anyway, it was Steven Tyler. And so Steven came out last year at for three shows, did Sweet Emotion, Dream On. You know, the great thing about Steven was, first of all, anyone who's seen, you know, TSO, it's basically Pink Floyd on massive steroids. And but it doesn't matter what kind of special effects you have, you know, what kind of lighting, what kind of pyro. When Steven hits the stage, it's his flight deck. He comes out for the encore, opens with Sweet Emotion. He just held that Colosseum in the palm of his hands. When he squeezed, you could feel it pulse. And by the time he goes into Dream On, he just tears the roof off the building. But the cool thing was, I mean, anybody in the band between 18 and 25, we call the kids, you know, they're watching this guy in awe. And to me, if anyone has a right, you know, to have an ego or, you know, or skip ego, you know, just wants their own space.
Right.
People like Roger Daltrey or Steven Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
And but not only was Steven great on the flight deck, you know, off the flight deck, you know, when the kids would come up and like, you know, how are you able to keep your voice in shape like that? How are you able to get that note? He would take, he was kind, he was humble, went out of his way to talk to everybody. You know, after the third show when he left, I said, you see the way that guy acts? That's the way you act.
Right.
Kind of like the Fred Astaire of rock and roll. And
right.
It's nice when you get to perform on a flight deck with someone you admired growing up or something. But when that person turns out to be a class act and, you know, down to earth and humble, it kind of like, you know, makes it twice as good. And
now, do you think that Steven will join you at the in the Providence show? Do you think is he planned on coming out?
The things we learned a long time ago was we never do Golden Circle. One year we made a mistake of asking someone too early. Now we only ask them 1 or 2 days before the show.
Uh-huh.
Because what happens is the scalpers find out, and it drives the ticket prices, you know, into the thousands.
Insane, right.
And instead of being, of us paying homage to somebody we admire and the fans getting a treat, you know, corporations and scalpers come up and just, you know, sweep up all the tickets they can. And so to us, you know, it's like 50% us paying homage and 50% just, you know, giving the fans, you know, something they didn't expect. And we only do it about, you know, 8 shows a year, but we always send a shuffle them. And it's a tradition, you know, we hope to keep doing as, you know, as long as we can get away with it. Because the band's demographic is so wide, you know, Live Nation once, about 5 years ago, they called up and said, Paul, you know, you're not going to believe your demographic. You're 51% female, 49% male, is the exact breakdown of America.
Uh-huh.
But they said, your average age is 21. I'm like, 21?
21, wow.
And they go, well, 7, 8, 9-year-olds cancel out the 6-year-olds, and the 10, 11, 12, 50, and which is why when we have special guests, they tend to need to be iconic. Everybody knows Joan Jett's I Love Rock and Roll. You know,
sure.
Everybody, you know, knows Daltrey's, you know, Pinball Wizard. And it was even funny because, like, when we had Greg Lake, you know, my daughter's 11, and but when she was, like, 9, you know, her and her little friends were there. I'm like, does anybody know Greg Lake? And they're like, no. I said, what about Emerson Lake Palmer? Like, no, Mr. O'Neill. And they go,
oh.
And then they go, welcome back, my friends. And they'll go, to the show that never ends.
Friends.
I'm like, in.
They're in. Yep, that's
you know?
It.
And so far, so good. You know, hopefully it'll keep going. And
yeah, I mean, every year your crowd, you know, increases. The albums keep selling more and more millions. And you've been on all over the TV. So people are quite aware of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Even, let's see, one of the Wizards in Winter, which is one of our favorites here that we play at Pixie, it was featured, what, on the Miller Lite commercial, too, a few years ago.
That was insane. That was that threw us all for a loop because it was the first record in history to not break through radio but to break through the internet. And I remember when the album came out in 2004, and then I get a call from a friend at Sony, isn't even our label, and he goes, Paul, do you guys realize you have the largest viral download on the internet with Wizards in Winter? And I'm like, what's a viral download? That's when somebody sends a video to 2 people, send it to 2 people. And he goes, somebody just did the math. And right now it's being downloaded at 50 million times a day. I'm like, really?
Wow, so that's astounding. A day.
So I trot to the office, you know, where a lot of kids are out of college. Does anybody know anything about a viral download with Wizards in Winter? I'm like, oh, yeah. So, like, 2 seconds later, they pull it up, and it was this guy in the Midwest who spent his whole summer wiring 50,000 lights to Wizards in Winter, and so they would all go off in time for music, bought a small little radio transmitter that transmitted for a mile around his house, big sign saying, turn your radio to such and such. And I'm watching this thing, and I'm going, wow. So I said, can somebody find out who this guy is and his phone number? And you could tell these guys were all into trouble in college because, like, 5 minutes later, the guy, we got his name, we have his number, we have Social Security, we have his credit cards, what do you want? And I'm like, I just need his phone number.
Yeah.
So I give the guy a call, and it's a gentleman named, you know, Carson Williams. I said, you know, is this Carson Williams? He goes, yes, who's this? I go, this is Paul O'Neill from Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and, you know, I just, you know, saw, you know, what you did to your house on the internet. You were unbelievably flattered. You've blown our mind, and we'd like to send you $5,000 so next year you can buy more lights and do a bigger job. And I hear this weird silence.
Yes.
He goes, man, my wife kept telling me I was going to get this call, but she said it was going to be from your lawyers with a cease and desist order, and not only had I blown the college kids' fund, the kids' college funds, now we were going to lose the house. I'm like, no, 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 it's great.
Oh.
And then it kind of started like an arms race because then someone in Frisco did their house to 100,000 lights. and someone in Denver did it to $250,000.
Oh, geez.
And then Minneapolis did $500,000. And the last I saw was somebody in, you know, like Florida to like 1,000,000 lights. And it's just like...
All right, now it's getting out of control.
Yes, now it's definitely getting out. I love the fans, but they're out of their minds. I love them, but they're insane.
Well, you are a very rare talent, and I know you've got a busy day with interviews, so I don't want to keep you too long, but...
Suzanne, you've been great.
Thank you so much, Paul O'Neill.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Congratulations on Night Castle. That's already hit the streets, and we will continue to support your music here, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra at Pixie 103.
You're the best, Suzanne. Take care.
Call again someday, okay?
You got it.
All right,
bye-bye.
Peace, my friend. Bye-bye.